Hi, I'm your host, Dr. Stephanie Smith, and this is the Move On Past podcast. This is season four, and in this season, I really wanted to focus on how we're caring for ourselves, how we're caring for others in our relationships, and just in life in general, how we're doing and finding balance. And so with this season, that's what season four is all about. So I'll share with you some conversations, a few meditations, and some information in this season that hopefully sparks a little initiative in you to find a bit more balance, make yourself just 5 to 10% more comfortable. Please know that this podcast is not meant to replace any type of professional care. With that, welcome to episode 29, where I sit down and have a conversation on communication with Sarah Bushy Reyes. If you like, subscribe, and if you want to leave a question that you'd like me to include on one of the podcasts, send me that question and we'll talk about that topic in some upcoming podcasts. Glad to have you as a listener.
So I'm sitting down with Sarah. She's an LPC in Marble Falls and owner of Peaceful Living Counseling and Wellness. She and I go way back. In fact, check out her first podcast interview in episode 17. Hey, Sarah. Thanks for sitting down with me.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Yeah, I'm so glad. So you made the trek over here to Lampasas to hang out with me. We are actually face-to-face, which is awesome during this pandemic.
That's a pretty cool thing. Yeah, refreshing.
Yeah. How are you holding up? How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm actually back to work quite a few face-to-face right now. It was all telehealth, but now I'd say it's probably 50-50.
Yeah, you're stepping out there.
I am.
Yeah. No, I'm all telehealth.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah, I'm all telehealth. There has been a few. I had a little open window to where in person. It lasted about 4 days before I was notified that I needed to go get COVID testing. So thankful that I made that step back because I just, I think I have a lot of clients who travel and have to be in places where there's potential exposure. Mm. So,
yeah, that's good to be extra careful.
Yeah. So I'm being more careful.
I guess I should say I'm cautiously seeing people face to face.
That's a good thing, though, because I think that there's such a need for that. So people are going to love to know that you're doing face to face. And I've even sent you some people because you are doing face to face.
I know. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And the other thing is because of the Gottman training that you just went through, because I avidly avoid any type of couple counseling whatsoever because I love myself and care about my well-being. So to sit in a couple session is challenging for me.
It is. It's scary. It's like two on one.
It's a hard thing because I think about like, but when you think about the reason and the purposes for why you're doing the counseling to begin with is because you have two people that love each other and want to work things out.
Yeah.
There's motivation there. So the few times that I have done it, it's been rewarding.
Yeah. I would say I definitely avoided it for a while just from lack of experience. But since the Gottman training, I feel a little more confident. Not a little bit more confident. I feel prepared.
Yeah, nice.
And like I understand where a lot of the conflict is coming from. And actually have tools to help.
Yeah.
So that's not something that you just have when you first start out as a counselor. So I'm really happy that I pursued that extra training.
Right. And I think as we evolve as counselors, like our interests and our specialties change with the more, like, who knows, maybe 10 years from now, I might want to do counseling, you know, a couple's counseling.
Yeah.
Right now, avidly, I say no. I mean, that's a wonderful thing. And I think that, man, with this pandemic going on, there's such a need for it right now.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Everybody's kind of cooped up and
ready to kill each other.
Yeah, yeah. And communication is, like, so key. So it's either make it or break it because we're already kind of carrying around the stress of day-to-day and then we add a global pandemic as an underlying pressure cooker. So
yeah.
What kind of things have you noticed any, I don't know, changes in how people are handling things now?
Well, I mean, like you said, I think communication is a huge issue. usually when people come to couples counseling, it's a breakdown in the communication is what I've seen. Mm-hmm. But as far as COVID, it's almost like people are spending too much time together now. You know, before there was such a complaint, like, we never have time for each other, or so-and-so's always working. Now it's like, oh my gosh, get out of my space.
Uh-huh.
I'm used to, like, having time to myself, and I don't have that anymore. So
mm-hmm.
I'm seeing a little bit of that, you know, and like, okay, let's, maybe we can find some ways that you can, like, have your own space, but then come together. But, you know, people are starting to go back to work, and so I think that's changing, but there was definitely a time where it was that you're just not used to being together 24/7, and that's hard.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of retired couples complain about. But now it's everybody.
I know now. Yeah, now it's like some of the newlyweds are getting some of that what's later empty nest,
because
it's like, oh, we only have each other. Or on top of that, now we have our toddlers or our kids who aren't going to school. So
Definitely.
Luckily, we're being about, what, 8-9 months into this, where society's kind of hitting a rhythm. But.
Well, and you have the new financial stress, you know, people losing their jobs,
Absolutely.
Losing their insurance, and you have, like you said, the kids are home all the time, so someone's got to be there with them.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just both go to work and leave them at home, and then if you both have to work, then you have to hire somebody, which you don't have any money. So there's just so many factors that have been influenced because of COVID.
Financial is definitely one, because work is either slowed down or stopped for some.
Mm-hmm.
So thankfully I hit a little rub there going from telehealth, you know, and people kind of slowed down because of counseling,
or lost insurance.
Yeah.
And couldn't continue.
Yeah,
because
their jobs changed. So, there's a lot of different factors, I think, that, I don't know, that we kind of try to absorb and work through and grin and bear it, but collectively, as they add up, we see more tension, I think, happening in relationships. So I think, whenever it gets into more time together and or more stressors, you know.
Right.
That's when kind of loving each other becomes a little hard. So
becomes a little difficult.
A little difficult. So for you, some of the highlight reels of issues that you frequently see with people when they mention relationships, what do you see as kind of being?
Definitely number one would be communication.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of, and I always say this to couples come in, you know, as we're growing up, we don't take a class in effective communication. We learn from the people that we're around. So if our parents didn't communicate very well, you know, we kind of absorb that. And so, like, nobody's really at fault for not having the tools to communicate effectively. It's just we don't have a class in it unless you actually seek out help for it and somebody can say, oh, yeah, this is really the best way to talk to somebody or how to approach a conflict. You know, you're not going to know, and you're going to do the best you can, and sometimes it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't like playing the blame game, you know. But we do fall into traps like mind reading, like just kind of assuming that the other person is thinking or feeling a certain way. And then that all sorts of wrong can go from that.
Right.
Because, you know, your partner might just be in a bad mood and has nothing to do with you. And yet here you are, you know, fuming in your room, like thinking that they're thinking all these terrible things about you and they weren't even thinking about you. So that I find is a huge issue for some people. So I always say the best thing you can do is check it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, you know, you seem like you're really upset. Did I do something? Are you having a bad day? You know, just check it out before you assume it's going to be about you and it blows up.
Yeah. It does seem like, that kind of the same things, like I'll see, even individually, people come and they'll talk about communication being an issue in individual counseling. And then eventually, you know, it transitions. Sometimes people come in individually to talk about how they might be influencing their relationship. So ultimately, I know at some point they're going to be referred to you when they come in for wanting to make that individual thing couples counseling. So we might be collaborating on a lot of
nice
clients together. Yeah, yes. But one of the things that I think is difficult for me being like specifically kind of working with clients who've gone through trauma is a lot of times, or anxiety, depression, a lot of times that anchors back into how it impacts their relationships and then how they're reading and communicating with other people. Like you said, they do a lot of mind reading, or mm-hmm. automatically they operate from a place where they feel unsafe, so that defense
right.
comes out.
They become very defensive. Usually
yeah.
when someone comes and they are very extremely defensive, I assume that there must be some sort of trauma in their past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that translation of that mind reading, they meant this, or when they said that, it meant this. Like
yeah.
collectively, they go to their file cabinet and they're like, every time somebody's told me that, it's made me feel, you know, unloved or unworthy or
right.
incapable or helpless. So like those are those ones that kind of default. With being Gottman trained, I love that, because that's one of my go-tos. So being Gottman trained, tell our listener what being Gottman trained, when we're throwing around Gottman. So what does that mean exactly?
So Gottman is actually this really amazing man. He's so funny. I love watching his videos. He's been studying couples since the 1970s. So he has years and years and years of research and methods that he's tried that haven't worked and that have proven to work. And he and his wife Julie now do this together, and they run seminars and like weekend seminars, which I would love to go to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's COVID, so my training was all online, but it was still really good. It was still
mm-hmm.
Really interesting, because they have amazing personalities. But they developed their Gottman training is off of the sound relationship house theory. So it deals with not only conflict and resolution, but also repairing friendship and love, which I love that, because, you know, when you think back to when you first started dating and that excitement of getting to know each other and all those questions that you had for each other, like, so if you could go anywhere, where would you go? You know,
yeah.
things like that. And it was just so fun and exciting. And over time we lose that, you know, we get stuck in our rut of
mm-hmm.
Just everyday mundane stuff. And one of the things I like to encourage the people that I'm counseling is, you know, when you go on date night, do those questions again, because you're updating it. You know, you're not the same person you were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You might, what are your life dreams right now? What is something you'd like to accomplish before you die? And just
mm-hmm.
kind of like reestablish that knowing of your partner. And in Gottman, they say that's the foundation of the house. That's called the love map.
Nice.
Yeah, and so there's actually 9 components to
uh-huh.
the Gottman method, and that is the initial first one. I don't know if you want me to talk about the other 9, but...
Oh, that'd be kind of good. I think, this might be a two-parter. but I
talk fast.
I think about, like, you said something and it triggered, like, some of the experiences that I've seen in session, like, because
mm-hmm.
we talked about like communication being an issue, but when I get my clients to really, really drill it down and get to the issue, it's not necessarily that they're bad communicators. It's they're not fair fighters,
mm.
you know?
Yeah.
So like they suck at arguing. or when there's a difference in viewpoint or opinion, like all these different translations, like that mind reading and,
yeah.
and things kind of come in. And then that overflows, because, you know, we have kind of this all or nothing mindset, like, well, if you're different, you're different. You know, if you have a different opinion, then you must be against me. You know, so then
yeah.
like then the curiosity, because the anger kind of overrides everything, or frustration,
mm-hmm.
and then we ignore or do these methods of avoiding the conflict, which then ultimately we avoid the person that we love and care about.
Right, and avoiding never works, because
yeah.
it'll always still be there until
yeah.
it's dealt with.
Yeah, so I love
yeah.
the idea of like of the love map, because mm-hmm. I haven't really ventured into that. Like, one of the ones, like, some of my favorite ones with Gottman were, like, the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. That's a handout that I give, and we could talk a bit about that, but...
Yeah, that's a big Gottman.
Yeah, is it What did you call? You said the love map was number one of...
Yeah, that was the foundation of the house.
Oh, the foundation of the house.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think, you know, what I think I interpreted is that, you know, the foundation is what holds everything up. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you have that love and that just basic friendship for each other, then, you know, when you do have conflicts, you are, you know... you're going to be able to handle it more because you're going to have more care and affection towards that person that you are having a conflict with.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because it's when we stop focusing on that foundation or the love mm-hmm. that, and that's whenever the conflict comes in mm-hmm. and the, as an overview, share what are the nine.
Okay.
Just so I'm on the same page mentally with you.
Yeah, the second story is called Shared Fondness and Admiration. Mm-hmm. And really, I really like this one because I kind of believe that human beings are kind of negatively oriented naturally. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to always kind of seek out what's going wrong or what this person isn't doing right, you know. And this is actually specifically looking for what your partner is doing right instead of focusing on everything that's going wrong.
Yeah. That's the opposite of, like, how our mind is wired.
Exactly.
We're wired for survival, so it's like, where is the danger?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's exactly. intentional to, mm-hmm. to look at what's going right.
Right.
Yeah, that's thoughtful.
And then the third one is turning towards, and this one's interesting. It's called a bid for emotional connection.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
that would be
that.
Kind of like... say you're on the couch on your phone playing a game or something
mm-hmm.
and I'm cooking dinner and I'm just like, wow, it's like a really beautiful day outside today. And you're just, and you don't say anything. You just, you know, you're on your phone on your game. That is a lost bid for connection.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're like, oh yeah, I did notice it was really nice out, you know, and you went back to even something that little is a bid, you're making the bid for connection. You're actually
mm-hmm.
connecting, even just that tiny.
Yeah.
And the fourth one is positive perspective. So this is when you are, I think this is where the love and the love maps comes into play,
mm-hmm.
is that when you are having a conflict, you approach it with more of a positive attitude. It's when you can say, you know, I love it when you do this, but... you know, sometimes you do this and it really comes off the wrong way. You know, it's just kind of the way you approach it in a
right.
more positive way of approaching a problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
And fifth is managing conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go into that in a whole another session.
Yeah, no kidding.
And sixth is making life dreams come true. That is when you really help your partner realize their life dreams. And you support them in that. And, it, you know, if you're with somebody and they're like, you know, I've always wanted to go, you know, be an architect. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know where that came from. But,
yeah.
Then your partner might be like, well, we should maybe look into some programs where you could maybe start doing that or go back to school. And
mm-hmm.
you support that person in their life dream, even if it has nothing to do with you. You're taking part in their life.
Yeah.
I've
seen that one in play. I've done
oh, yeah.
that in sessions before, and there's an exercise called Dream Catcher,
mm.
and the couple will set a timer. They're guided through, I think Gottman gives a little list, or maybe somebody generated this that had gone through the Gottman training, but it was a great little handout, and it was basically where they talk about, like, wow, one of my most favorite places to vacation, and while that person dreams... their partner is the dream catcher. So their responsibility is to safely hold that dream for that person and catch it and hold it and be kind to it. They respond in a way that is, oh, tell me more about that. Like, what do you like about that? As opposed to like, yeah, what? That sounds like a disaster waiting.
It sounds like it's going to break my bank account.
Yes, to where... as opposed to bringing in, like, the sarcasm, it's, hey, I'm going to catch that for you and
yeah.
and I love you're able to dream, because those are the things that you said, like, help that love map of, like, oh, yeah, wow, you're curious now, and you're supporting, like, early dating.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and, yeah, that's kind of a lost art when we make the assumption that we know somebody, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I could vouch for that one. I've seen that one work.
That's
just
awesome.
Beautifully, which is wonderful.
Yeah, and I mean, along with that, you do think you know somebody, but over time, we all change.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
when our goals change, and you might see something on a movie and be like, oh my gosh, I want to go there, and now that's like your new place
yeah.
that you want to go.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's
yeah.
really cool, Dreamcatcher. I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah, I'll share it with you. Yeah.
So the attic is called Shared. Create shared meaning, which is you're building a life together with shared meaning.
Makes sense.
So, yeah. But I think it's just finding the things that you both value and have in common. You make your life decisions and your choices based on that. So if you decide that you're a couple that really, really loves different cultures,
mm-hmm.
maybe you might want to make plans to travel and see the world together. But there's a shared meaning there that you both have, and yeah, that's pretty
yeah,
I don't
nice.
Really know how much more to go into that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Appropriate title for that one, too.
Yeah. It kind of describes itself, right?
Uh-huh.
Didn't really need more explanation. And the sides of the house, which I interpret as like the support beams, is trust and commitment. And those obviously speak for themselves.
Right.
So those are the 9 components of
the house.
Sound relationship house theory that's Gottman.
Nice. It's a nice visual when you think about it.
It is. And I actually have the visual to show couples, and we go through each level together and see what is going well. What maybe we could incorporate more into, and what is their real sticking point?
Yeah,
and then we just focus on that.
Yeah, I frequently, like, there were some that were really highlighted, and because Gottman had put out like the 6 predictors for marital success and happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, however he packages those theories, like however they come across is so. I like that it's based upon the house.
Yeah.
Theory, because one of the ones that I, like, we describe the bids quite
yes.
often. That's
yes.
one that I see kind of frequently being used or misused or missed, because we don't really recognize what someone's bid is.
Mm-hmm.
One shared experience is we were talking about bids. A client came back in and she was like, I didn't realize going to Lowe's was a bid. You know, but how...
That's a huge bit.
I know, yeah. You think, like, because I think
yeah.
about, like, and even personally, like, if, you know, when we used to venture out, like, hey, you want to go sit with me at curbside to go pick up groceries? You know, now it's like, hey, take a drive with me. Or even, like, grocery store shop or things to where you don't really think of those as bids for... time together, and
right.
and men have to recognize that they're making bids, you know, and,
yeah.
and even when how often you're making a bid, it kind of measures the health of the relationship as well.
Yeah, he mentions the emotional love bank, and so every
uh-huh.
time you make a bid, you're filling that love bank.
Oh,
and
nice.
I like that image too, because. Every little thing matters,
mm-hmm.
you know? I mean, like
yeah.
you said, just run into Lowe's, you know, that
right.
that is something right there. You're spending time together. You're letting the other person know that you care about what they're interested in. And,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think making them and then meeting them, too, or recognizing how often we're missing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, I think sometimes... that's a very interesting thing.
I find myself too, like, just after a long day's work, you know, I'm definitely guilty of it, or I'm talked out, I'm tired, and I'm just kind of zoning out or
mm-hmm.
reading and playing a game, you know, on my phone or whatever, you know, and my wife will say something to me and I'm like, wait, what? Did you say, you know, I mean, like, you know, 10 minutes later, I'm sorry, did you say something? You know, it's
mm-hmm.
like,
mm-hmm.
Not the greatest thing. So I do, like, I have to remind myself, just because I've been talking to other people all day long doesn't mean I can come home and ignore my wife. I need to also, you know, pay attention even to the little things too.
Uh-huh. And this is something that I noticed where I've recognized, like, ooh, I loved my commute, you know, to and from work, because
mm-hmm.
it was about 20, 25 minutes. And so I had time to transition,
yes.
so to speak, and now with like COVID, people working from home, we don't really have that transition of let me let go my work stress
mm-hmm.
or my work persona and then move
right.
it back into family or relationship or single self, whatever it happens to
yeah.
be, to be able to have that transition, it's missing. And so I love the phrase to be intentional.
Yeah.
You know, really about kind of making sure, like, oh yeah, I need to set my mind for I'm home now, or I'm off work. I moved from. So if it helps, if you work in a different location, if you are working from home, to have it designated as this is my workspace, and maybe there's some transition where you turn off the lamp that was your work lamp, and,
right?
You know, some sort of something.
I've heard people doing different things, like changing their shoes, like
yes.
anything.
Yeah,
I had to do that even during when I was doing all telehealth. I would still go to my office and sit in my office by myself with my
mm-hmm.
computer. One, it was just more private. My dog wouldn't be barking in the background at people walking by. But also, I needed that transition. Like, okay, I'm at work. I need to put my counselor hat on
yeah.
and focus. And then when I got home, I could take that off. And it really helped with the transition.
Yes.
But you're right. Like, now, because
yeah.
of COVID, a lot of people can't do that. They're just at home all
yeah.
day.
I really like Gottman and then Esther Perel. And who is another big couples
yes.
counseling.
I've listened
guru.
To some of her podcasts.
Uh-huh.
Really good. If
yes.
people can listen to that, that's
yeah.
a good one.
She had described, and it kind of hit for me, and it's something that I've shared with some clients too, because she talked about, she said, to not think of our partner as a comfortable chair. That we return to and kind of assume that, you know, there's not a lot of effort when we plop down in our comfy chair.
We are on the same wavelength, because I was just thinking, you know, taking your partner for granted.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And I think that we, after some time, it's really easy to slip into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And especially whenever there's so many other little stress factors to recognize, like, wow, yeah, our relationship matters in the midst of this stress and
mm-hmm.
the things, you know, I think sometimes the irritability or even the anxiety of the unknown of
mm-hmm.
the election, the pandemic, everything I've seen, everything is meaning something to everyone right now,
yeah.
you know? And so
yeah. everyone's affected.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Instead of just some people.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This is the first time that I've counseled people that are also going through the same trauma I am.
Exactly.
You know,
yes.
Like, we're all
like,
in
well,
the pandemic.
Yeah,
yeah,
we're all in this together. So.
Yes. We're all waiting on
yeah.
certain things to see how they're going. And there's a lot of unknowns in life now. So, yeah. So a lot of times, instead of communicating and staying together with the people that we love, we use them as our vent or
mm-hmm.
our comfy chair that we take for granted that, well, I don't have to talk about it, or when I do talk about it, I'm going to,
yes.
so to speak. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, that's something. So, it sounds like Gottman, I love the house pillars. House, why do I keep forgetting that?
the floors? Like
the nine.
The foundation.
The foundation.
The nine components.
Thank
that's
you.
What it is.
Thank you. Goodness sake. That's another thing, retaining things during a pandemic.
That's a sign of stress right there. So.
I know. Ooh, I breathe out. So there's, yeah, we went over the little classical sheets here. Our conversation, we went on tangents as we usually do. Yeah, so what have you noticed? What did you pick up? It sounds like the foundations were some of the good ones. I go right to the meat of, like, I think that those are wonderful components, but like individually, And this is probably the difference when I work with individuals, like, we get, like, right to, like, oh, yeah, you're having some conflict, or here's where we are. So the Horseman of the Apocalypse is really dealing with the
conflict.
So, yeah, I love that, like, the nine foundations, because I think that's important to really be intentional about the positives, but man, in the meat of it, and I utilize this handout a lot, like the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, like when we're in conflict, the last thing we're thinking about is being intentional and loving a lot of times. And
right.
But I think if we become aware of that, now tell me a bit about like the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
So if one of these four are present, it's not good. These are the things you don't want to have when you're doing conflict, any kind of conflict resolution, when you're communicating with each other. The first one is criticism. And that is very much when you're having an issue with something that somebody did. Mm-hmm. And I like to use examples. So
yeah,
so my wife might accidentally she's gonna love this. Leave cabinets open. And that drives me crazy. And so instead of saying, you know, you always do this, you don't even take the time to close the cabinet, I'm attacking her. I'm criticizing her as a person by saying that she always does this or that. Mm-hmm. Instead, what you want to do is focus on what it is that you're not happy with. Could you please try to close the cabinet doors more often, because sometimes I run into them, hit my head or something, you know, just the way that I'm not attacking her as a person. Mm-hmm. It's just the action that's bothering me. And I say that with full disclosure, there's a lot of things I do that I know annoy her. So it is definitely
good disclaimer.
Know, yes. That's just the example that came up in my head. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when you're criticizing, you definitely want to criticize the action and not the person. And when you know you're doing that, is typically when you're saying always and never.
Yeah.
You never do this. You always do that. You are actually attacking the person. Mm-hmm. And so, and we don't want to do that, you know, because we're all human. We all make mistakes. What we want is for the behavior to stop, not to hurt the other person. Mm-hmm. So that is one. The second one is defensiveness. And this is kind of instinctual. When people have a problem with us, most people get a little defensive. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's human. I think you have to watch for, I guess, the level of defensiveness. I mean, on some level, you know, we get a little defensive because no one likes to be criticized. Mm-hmm. A lot of that has to do with the delivery of the person that is having the issue with you. If they're sort of in attacking and a you mode, you're going to feel a lot more defensive. But
yeah.
I think it's fair to say that when someone has an issue with you, try to remember that you're human and that you do make mistakes, and that's okay. The best thing you could do is just be open to what they're saying, and whether you agree with it or not, like, even if you don't agree with it, hear them out, listen to what it is that's bothering them. And then, because if you come right back with, if they're like, well, you know, you do this, and you come right back with, well, you do this,
right.
You know,
yes.
Then nothing's getting solved and you're just attacking each other. And
classic accelerator of conflict.
Let's pour some gas on that fire. But yeah, I mean, just trying to, when your partner has an issue with you, try to remember that you're not perfect. You're going to do some things wrong. And the whole point is you want the relationship to succeed. So you need to keep an open mind and think to yourself, maybe I am in the wrong this time. Maybe I have a hard time with that because I'm always in the right. But, you know, but allowing yourself to say, yeah, I probably said that wrong, or I made that mistake, and not be quite so, not be as defensive.
Yeah. It's hard to receive sometimes. I think especially when there's that underlying feeling of hurt, you know, like automatically, like when we feel a vulnerable emotion, like our defense comes out of like, I have to protect myself. And so, yeah, that's another, to go back to that intention of how to diffuse that of like you said, like, oh, well, maybe like to give someone the benefit of the doubt. It could be, it softens that feeling in ourselves. So, mm-hmm. but yeah, that defense is a huge one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it's huge because we all feel it,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're all
mm-hmm.
human and we don't like
yeah.
to be told that.
Gosh, especially in conflict. Yeah. Especially in conflict.
Yeah.
And sometimes I even think like the disagreement or the difference is automatically seen as conflict whenever it really it could just be like, oh good, this is an opportunity to learn something,
mm-hmm.
learn a different perception or to recognize, wow, that's the way you saw that. It, you know,
mm-hmm.
so yeah, it's a different way.
It's like, I didn't realize that I came across that way.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know, I know for myself, I can be blunt and sometimes that comes off harsh. And so I've been told that. And now like I try to be aware of it and try to soften my words and not be quite so blunt and,
right.
you know, try. I mean, that's my natural default, but but I do make a significant attempt to not do that because
mm-hmm.
I know that that's going to cause problems. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's good insight because, you know, to recognize like, oh, yeah, I kind of do have that tendency of
mm-hmm.
certain, you know, whatever that quality is. I'm trying to think of something I do. God. Coming up with nothing. But yeah,
nice.
To be able to reflect upon that
yeah.
that thing of like, oh yeah, I do have that tendency, and it's okay that that person pointed it out because it's interesting because we know it, and then when someone points it out, we're like, hey,
right?
What do you mean?
That's probably when we get most offensive, is we know that they're telling the truth.
Yeah, it's like, truth hurts, man.
Yeah,
I must attack. Yeah.
Yeah. So the third one is contempt. That is the third horseman. And this is the one that Gottman says is the biggest, if there's contempt, that's the biggest predictor of divorce. It's
mm.
kind of like you feel like you're better than your partner and you talk down to them.
Yeah.
To me, a lot of verbal abuse comes out of this one.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, you know, you might tease your partner, like, playfully, but when you start, like, making fun of your partner or mocking them, you know, calling them names,
yeah.
that's when it's pretty bad at that
yeah.
point. Like, that's just not okay behavior. And that's probably when you know your relationship is probably heading down the toilet. I'm not going to say it's in the toilet because
mm-hmm.
I feel like most relationships can be saved if there's will there to save it, but
yeah,
contempt is a pretty bad one.
Yeah. I've heard it defined before, and I like this definition, and it's no longer are you criticizing what someone does, you're criticizing who they are.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's whenever you recognize, like, wow, my perception, yeah, I could see why contempt is a predictor for divorce, because whenever you think, my perception of this person, I don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
yeah,
not,
it's no longer
like,
love
yeah.
and friendship. It's now it's like, I hate you. I don't like any, I don't like you. I don't like
mm-hmm.
the basic you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how a relationship can really survive with that
yeah.
as the foundation. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That it makes sense that's a predictor.
Mm-hmm.
And so to counter that.
Where the sound relationship house theory, when I talked about, you know, the positive holding your partner in positive regard, this is when you start looking for the things you like about your partner. This is when you start looking at what they do right instead of not
yeah.
everything they do wrong and all the things you don't like about them. And you start thinking about what I initially loved about my partner and what I do like about that partner.
That's the exact, yeah, that's what I think. But to think about the counter of like, oh, if I'm feeling contempt for someone that I love, like, I would say there's a lot of backstepping that needs to happen. Like, before, sometimes people might want to know, like, especially couples, like, well, exactly how long will this take? You know, like, how long is this therapy thing going to take? How long do I have to commit to pretending I'm going to work with this person to get through this marriage? And I think about it, like, if it's to the point, where contempt is working in the relationship than to think about the amount of time and the amount and the number of experiences that have happened that built that up. Because if someone is truly devoting themselves to coming into couples therapy, like, it's not going to be a 1 hour session,
right,
that's going to fade away those feelings of contempt. And usually that contempt is there because there's so many layers of hurt.
Yes, it just builds and builds and builds. Yeah, you don't go from loving someone to feeling contempt for them quickly. I mean, that's like, yeah.
Yeah, so I love it when couples come in for, you know, hey, we want to work through this. You know, we want to work through, we have this little issue where we've noticed there's a difference here. We want to sort out how to productively work through this together.
Mm-hmm.
To where if a couple's married for 6 years, 12 years, 20 years, whatever, and suddenly, you know, whenever someone, you know, whenever you're to the point of like, I have contempt for this person, this is my, I think I'm supposed to check this box before we go through divorce, you know.
Yeah.
When they're already at the end of the argument, you know, well, divorce is thrown out in conversation or conflict or fight. Yeah, usually there's a lot more commitment that needs to be made in the counseling process.
Oh, definitely.
So I could see why contempt and what, as far as like when you think about that as being what to do instead, like the positive regard and intentional.
Yeah, I think that's the main one. I mean, for when you're thinking of all the bad stuff, you're obviously gonna regard your partner negatively.
Yeah.
And if you think if you are finding something positive in your partner, if that's impossible for you, I would say you probably need to exit the relationship. If you can't find anything good about your partner, that's a big red flag, you know? But most people, they might be feeling contempt. Not, I'm going to say most people, but some people that are feeling contempt can really try and, like you said, be intentional in finding the good in their partner. And like, yeah, my partner does this, but, you know, they do actually always really, you know, they're very romantic when it's my birthday or, you know, just something. Mm-hmm. Find something that you do really like and care about your partner and try to focus on that. And
that's,
to me, habit building. You are in the habit of finding all the bad. You have to kind of, you know, there's even people that, you know, have those gratitude journals. Well, write down the things that you love about your partner every night before you go to bed or every morning when you wake up, you know, whichever. I'm not a morning person, so for me at night. But write down things that you love about your partner and try to start on that positive note.
Mm-hmm. That you just hit something that is key. Like, it's habit forming. Yeah, because that there is a default there of like, well, I've been there before, I'm going to say it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes I even see it as like people who truly have a foundation in that relationship, the contempt might come out because of the emotion. Not necessarily.
Not because they really feel contempt towards their partner.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're just so deeply hurt,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's where
yeah.
a lot of communication work can be done.
Yeah, the emotion leads, and then they have this misalignment of wow, I said this, and I went to a place I didn't really want to go because I don't even feel that. Now that the emotion has subsided, I feel a lot of guilt and regret for what I said.
Yeah.
And then the couple doesn't go back because it's like, well, they're mad too. I'm going to follow the trend of we're going to ignore the hurt in the room mm-hmm. as opposed to going back and kind of reclaiming that relationship of, you know what, I said that in emotion
mm-hmm.
and I didn't mean it. These are the things that I enjoy and love about you. And I said that because I was hurt, not because of who you are. And that if they're able to do that and recognize the difference in that, that'll stop that habit from leading to divorce.
Absolutely.
You know, if they can do that and honestly know, like, man, my emotion's gonna end this relationship, you know.
That is like the soft starts of disagreement that Gottman talks about.
Oh, yeah.
Like when you, instead of, you know, you have that contempt and you're going to say those harsh words, to really think about what you're going to say first. And, you know, I always think it's good to start out with something positive. Like, you mm-hmm. know, you are so good at this, and I really appreciate that about you.
Yeah.
But when you do this, you know, it's hurtful or whatever,
right.
whatever that is.
Right, right.
But starting
out. That just
made
me feel nice.
Did it?
The way that you started that, like, I was like, yeah, Sarah, good. Thank you. What a soft start. Ooh. Yeah, what else you want to say?
I think you're fantastic.
Thank you. That made it so, that delivery was just wonderful. The fourth horseman.
Right.
That's another big one. I wonder if he
yes.
meant these as progressions, you know?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the stonewalling. That
mm-hmm.
was the fourth horseman. Yeah, it's like it's like talking to a stone wall.
Mm-hmm.
You get absolutely no reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they're ignoring you, but I don't know if it's intentional. It's sort of like they're so overwhelmed. Gottman actually talks about flooding. And even in their videos they were doing, like, mock couples counseling, they
yeah.
actually had the couples wearing heart rate monitors.
Oh,
and
wow.
if it got over 100 beats, you were flooding emotionally. It was really fascinating. I don't think I'm going to have my couples do that.
Yeah.
But when you start to get flooded, you typically shut down and you no longer hear what the other person is saying, and you just kind of shut them out.
Okay.
And so that can vary. A lot of stonewalling is flooding.
Yeah.
But it's basically like you're just getting zero response.
Gotcha. So define flooding. Tell me more about flooding. Is flooding more like I'm purging every feeling that I put to, so is that the other end of the continuum? Is like
yeah.
flooding, I'm purging every single, I'm going to snowball every negative thing that there is.
It's the person on the receiving end that gets flooded. So
ah, okay.
so you might be upset with me and telling me what I've done wrong and how upset you are with me.
Yeah.
And I, my heart rate would start to get really high, and I would start to get, like, physically flooded from too much emotion that's going on.
Mm. And then the response becomes the stonewall?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Just shut down.
Oh.
And, like, some people will just kind of look down.
How often have we seen that?
Or look away.
In couples.
Yeah.
Or when they talk about, and this is what, and then this happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the person's kind of, like, already shut it off and
mm-hmm.
is, like, not even listening anymore.
Right. Right.
So part of that is because of the flooding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of it could be.
Yeah, I see that often. Flooding, my term, I guess, for that is more along the lines of, like, that Esther Perel calls it kitchen sinking.
Oh, okay.
To where, like, if you're upset, like, everything I'm now going to bring up to support my feeling,
mm-hmm.
Or we're arguing about tickets to the movie, and by the end of that argument, we're now talking about what a sorry father you are to the children, or how you
yeah.
don't, you know, and it's so it somehow suddenly transformed into this whole new thing, and Esther Perel calls it kitchen sinking.
I like that.
Like
that's
every
a great
everything
analogy.
In the kitchen
throwing
sink.
Everything in this kitchen sink.
Yeah,
yeah.
It kind of gets in there. So that's, I think, Gottman and Esther Perel, the different phrases, but same result. And then, of course, like, I guess the only safe response in that to stop the escalation would be the stonewall.
One of the ways to kind of fix that, if somebody is getting very overflooded, is just stop the conversation right there.
Mm-hmm.
The person needs a break. And I tell everybody that has problems with anger that it's okay to say, I need to take a break.
Yeah.
Like, I can't talk about this right now. You always want to come back to it when you've calmed down. You don't want
mm-hmm.
to, like, let it go and then it just gets buried. But it's okay to, The phrase I hate the most, I have to tell you, is never go to bed angry. What? What? No. Go to bed. Get some sleep. Mm-hmm. Think about it a little bit. Get your thoughts in order and be less emotional when you wake up. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, have a nice cup of coffee and talk about it. But, like, forcing that conversation when you're really, really angry, that's really not going to do anybody. That's when you say stuff that you really don't mean.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Because you're the quick escape then becomes like, okay, well, how do I get this emotion to stop? Let me say the most harshest thing, or let me just completely shut down or stop and intentionally punish that person with my silence. Mm-hmm. Or I'm glad you made that association between the two, because that's something to see, like, ooh, that's what creates that, you know, because I think to say, like, a lot of times, like, there's that joke about couples counseling, like, you know, tell each other you're sorry. You're sorry. You know, it's like, but to recognize that, like, the reason these behaviors are, as Gottman eloquently puts them, the four horsemen of the apocalypse kind of come in, is it's based upon their, it's a response to a behavior, you know, all action has a purpose, and so there's something to where two people are creating this,
right?
You know, and a lot of times I think that breakdown of communication is the thought of, well, they're the ones that are doing this, mm-hmm. and there's not that ownership of responsibility of, I must be doing something that's triggering this, you know, and then that makes it a little more open to change happening.
Exactly. It's like, because, you know, they always say you can't change other people, but what you can change is yourself. You can change how you approach it, maybe how you word it, mm-hmm. and that, just in that, can change how your partner responds and changes, can change all of it.
Yeah, yeah. More people are talking about going to counseling, and I watched something Michelle Obama had talked about, and I thought, wow, she's talking about how she went to counseling, the president, you know, and they talked about marriage counseling, and she said when she sat down for couples counseling, because there's a misunderstanding as to what that means, you know, she sat down for the appointment, and she was like, fix this man, you know, and getting the realization of, like, what to expect in couples counseling is knowing, like, oh, okay, there's two people in this relationship. So is there some sort of something you share with people to prepare them for couples counseling?
I think the first thing that I tell people is that I'm treating the relationship, that I'm not going to take sides with either one. Yeah. So if I have a suggestion or, you know, something to reveal to one person, I'm not siding with the other person.
Yeah.
And the third person in the room is the relationship.
Yeah.
And that's what we're focusing on.
The relationship is your client.
Exactly.
Yeah.
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 Also, you know, I'm human too. And so, and so a lot of the stuff I've experienced or I understand, I am not judging you in any way, because I understand why we do react the way we do. And I just have some techniques and some tips and, like, how to change that.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said earlier, I have stuff that goes on in my own life, in my own relationship. So I try to let them know, like, I'm not an expert on you and your relationship. You are the expert on you and your relationship.
Yeah.
I'm the third party that can notice things that maybe you can't notice because you're in it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, you bring the strategies
to the
situation, you know, because if we keep doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result, we're not going to get very many places with that. And, very, very very insightful to recognize that. I like that idea of, you know, you're there to treat the relationship. Mm-hmm. And my thought is that when couples think about that, to think about that they're there for the relationship, you know, not for the other person. Mm-hmm. You know, well, I'm here to support you while you change him so that our marriage can be better, or change her so that relationship can be better. Yeah, to think about that. This is good stuff. I think it kind of normalizes to know, like, man, we go through it. And even counselors, like, sometimes there's that, we have those bias in certain situations. I always give that disclaimer, like, I am not your person for this. If you're wanting to better, I try to think of, like, what flaw do I have?
But, can't think of anything.
Well, anyway, I think I'm clear. But if something comes up in session to where I think, like, ooh, yeah, I go there too. Yeah. Amen, sister. Like, then I know, like, and I'll give that disclaimer, like, I am not your person to better that.
Yeah, know? Right.
Like, there's those things to know, like, hey, we all have it. And on some level, just knowing that it's normalized and validated feels better. Mm-hmm. You know, to know, like, man, like the pandemic, like, to normalize and make it feel better, like, we're all going through it.
Yes.
You know, it's tough. And it's one more thing in our backpack of issues that we're carrying. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so this is good stuff, Sarah. So if our listener wants to contact you, how can he or she go about doing that?
You can Google me on Psychology Today,
nice.
Or you can call me at 830-953-1290. That's my direct line, and I work by myself, so you're not going to get a receptionist or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You'll talk directly to me, and I like to do a little mini consultation on the phone, usually about 10 minutes, just to see if the issues that you have are within my skill set.
Yeah.
Or if maybe I'm somebody that you would want to work with, because, you know, there's always personality stuff. So I think a little consultation on the phone is always helpful.
Amen to that. That's a good thing, because, yeah, you want to like your counselor.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of, like, huge.
Makes a big deal. Makes a big difference.
Unless you just want someone to vomit all over, then, you know, you don't have to like your counselor.
Right. Then I suggest, you know, it's a lot cheaper. Just go get yourself a poster cut out.
There you go.
Somebody.
Or a punching bag.
Yeah, a punching bag. Something. Stuffed animal. But, no, we are not that... Stuffed animals or cutouts should replace the need for counseling. If you are struggling, we'd like to disclose. Yes.
Good disclaimer. Good.
Please contact a counselor in your area. One that you ultimately could get along with and like, preferably.
Right.
So thanks, Sarah. This was good stuff. I enjoyed sitting down and talking with you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.